Welcome to another edition of the Insurance AUM Journal podcast. My name is Stuart Foley, and I'll be your host, standing with you at the corner of insurance and asset management with a very special guest today. Mr. Sanjay Chawla from FM Global CIO is here today. Welcome, Sanjay.
Thank you, Stuart.
We are very fortunate to have you in studio today. You're a very unique case. You came out of corporate America pension environment into the insurance space. Heaven only knows why you'd do that. I want to hear that story. That's a good one. But before then, I think what a lot of people want to hear, not only more seasoned professionals, but especially students and young professionals want to know, how does a guy like Sanjay Chawla end up as the CIO of a major insurance company? What's that path look like?
Thanks, Stuart. This is, a great opportunity actually to be able to share some thoughts. So thanks for having me on the podcast today. It's been an amazing journey. I have to say, I'm absolutely gratified for the path that I've had. You know, it starts off with some great values that your parents pass along to you, and then the education system. I grew up in New Delhi in India. I went to a private school there. My parents both came from a service pedigree as well, right? My mother was an English teacher. My dad was in the financial services industry at the time. Was at a bank, and just coming from that part, and education was absolutely key. And we spent a lot of time, just going through different things around quantitative side of things, as well as I also had the chance to get very passionate about basketball growing up in school, and went on to play some serious basketball in high school as well as in the college level. So much so, even at the national level for a couple of years, which is very fortunate. And I share with my kids today is, make sure you're part of a sport, especially a team sport, right? Which actually just gives you so much to learn from leadership levels and the collaboration as well. So that was, to me, I was a key part of how I grew up from there. I came to the U.S. for grad school, went on to, actually work in Washington, D.C. at a law firm. And ironically, it happened to be, how it all comes around, a law firm that was, specialized, like one of the top firms in corporate pensions as well as in insurance. So it comes around full circle on that front, right? So, and after that, I had the chance to go work for Dow Chemical. I spent 18 years at Dow Chemical in various corporate treasury, regional finance roles, leadership roles. And it was just an amazing career. I say that, that's very, very gratifying manner, because where you start from, the sponsors, the mentors that give you that support, that build the trust and the confidence level. Work ethics was extremely important for me, subject matter expertise build out. And that got noticed very quickly at Dow, and I had just an exciting career that took me to the other part of the world in Asia as well on expert assignments for about 9 years actually, which was really phenomenal. It's just an amazing amount of learning from a financial market standpoint, as well as then from a geographic perspective as well, right? And came back, joined the pensions group. That's where I spent about 6 years in corporate pensions at Dow as the head of asset allocation, looking after about 85% of the assets at that time. An amazing opportunity came, was Raytheon was looking for a CIO. I took that risk, was one of the best places to have worked at as well. And just amazing confidence level, and some one of the sharpest people I've worked with, and just a phenomenal organization on that front. Yeah, so it was a very difficult decision, to leave such a great job, but the CIO job at FM Global came to me, and I it's, as I thought through that as well, it very much had a combination of internal as well as external management of the investments portfolio. It very much, front and center on the balance sheet of the company, as well as we'll have the pensions as well. So it was just a unique opportunity. And as a talk to leadership, it was just an amazing culture. And I have to say, it's been all upward surprises on that front, as opposed to, as we call it, you know, you diligence everything at the start, and it turned out to be that and better.
That's great. That's a great review. I appreciate that very much. The differences between running corporate pension money and insurance GA money, it's night and day. I'm sure you knew that doing your due diligence coming in. What's the reality versus your expectation coming in, realizing what the investing for insurance company environment is like versus not? How do you rate that change?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. It actually has, you know, for me, it's been really powerful, right? You know, certainly, you know, corporate pension, I mean, you're in a very, very responsible job where you're looking after, you know, the retirement, the nest egg for over 100,000 people in that respect. And so it's a very gratifying role. I remember when I was actually getting the job, I was telling my kids at the time, and I'm not kidding, but, you know, our lives will change because you will find less of me because I now have a fiduciary level responsibility, which I'll put that ahead of anything and everything else around that as well, right? So that is something which you kind of train yourself on as well, right? That mindset where you engage personally on anything and everything on that front in an arm's length manner on that front. Yeah, as you come on to the insurance side of things as well, you know, the net, you know, as I talk about it, is, you know, the title, you know, our title is Chief Investment Officer. So the I is common, whether you do that for the pension portfolio as well as for the insurance portfolio on that front. So that's something which is the common base, that my expertise, my subject matter expertise is very much on the investment side. You do that, you know, in the best interest of the pension plan when you were doing that for a corporate pension, large corporate pension portfolio. And you do that the same way for an insurance portfolio as well. In addition, we have our pension portfolio as well, right? Which is smaller compared to some of the larger organizations. But net, you know, what the underlying principles, the subject matter expertise is exactly the same. What is nice about what I do in the insurance world, it also puts together, you know, all the years I spent at Dow in corporate treasury and risk management. And as we talk about it, it's, you know, one of my mentors used to say, it's all about risk management. You know, it's whatever we do, even as you're taking risk on, you need to make sure you're managing all the risks around a different perspective. Because, you know, that is where it starts. You know, you're okay to take that risk if you have an expected commensurate, you know, reward that comes out of that as well, right? So it's been actually very good.
I mean, you're a man of your word. It's been an incredibly volatile 2020 year to date, and you have been working extremely diligently because we've had a tough time getting this call on the books, and it's completely understandable. I mean, you've got, you know, there's a lot of balls in the air. I know that you, FM Global, looks at the world in terms of total return. Some insurance companies look at the world in book yield terms. I'd say more do than don't. What are the differences? How do you see those compare and contrast?
Yeah, I mean, I think for us, you know, we FM Global is an amazing company. We're, you know, 185 plus years old company. Great business model, very strong surplus situation. We've got a pretty balanced asset allocation framework, and you know, that's something which we continue to kind of build on as well, right? So we're able to run some growth assets as well, and in addition to, you know, just fixed income assets, which a lot of, you know, the life insurance companies will end up looking at that and managing that portfolio, you know, almost holistically in that respect, with a smaller piece of other risk assets. You know, our policies are much shorter dated in that respect, and given the strong surplus, we can run the portfolio that we run. So that's how we kind of approach it. You know, we periodically will run a strategic asset allocation framework, you know, what makes best sense, that help us manage the risks and take advantage of the opportunities in the market space. But net, you know, I do see my job as CIO is to make sure I manage the portfolio in as diligent a manner, where I manage the downside in the best possible perspective, keeping the upside open as well, right? So the total risk-adjusted return in from an optimal perspective, becomes my most important driver on that front.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned your former mentor talking about risk management being the most important goal there. There's a lot of things going on, unemployment all over the place. You've got a lot of exogenous shocks, a lot of protests, COVID-19. I mean, unprecedented levels of things going on within and outside the markets right now. That has a lot of impact on insurance companies' portfolios, but in various different ways. Where do you think the risks are in the capital markets? Let's just start with the capital markets. How are you feeling about things at the moment?
I mean, I have to say, as we do this as well, you know, equity markets have come back up in a very strong manner, which obviously, you know, the markets are expecting things to come back to normal much faster than what was visible a month ago or 2 months ago in that manner, right? I think one of the things that has been talked about is just been a huge disconnect between financial markets and the economic outlook as well. And, we did get a strong, we say that as a strong number on a marginal basis on the employment side, you know, last week. Having said that, it still is, you know, keeps us at a very significantly high unemployment rate number, right? 13% is still a very high number, but it was much lower than what the market expected it to be, or the economists expected it to be. So that is the one part. You know, there's so much lack of transparency in the whole framework right now. As thoughtful long-term investors, you want to have, you know, the future is never absolutely clear, but there's more transparency in what companies can do, what the economic outlook can be in that respect, be it from a growth perspective, inflation, as well as from an employment standpoint. You know, the consumer, U.S. consumer had been the strongest pillar out there as we approached this year as well, right? And so everything was looking very solid, actually, for this year to be delivering another double-digit equities return. And yet, you know, when we had this, the COVID-19 risk become a little bit more real than in mid to late February from a market standpoint. And as March unfolded, it was absolutely, as you talk about, an unprecedented time in that from a capital markets perspective. What really, I think, you know, there's certain key things that happened, which as we kind of look to make similarities with 2008 crisis or 9/11 for that matter, by far the pace of it was so sharp that it very much exceeded anything that we had seen in our recent times on that front, right? So that makes it very hard because, I mean, right now the market is very much trading on a lot of optimism, but a lot of the cash flows that we look at from a valuation perspective, you know, that needs to come through with a little bit better, you know, higher probability of that to take realization on that front, right? So it is the biggest disconnect at the present time. You know, and net, you know, as a lot of experts have said, what happens with COVID-19 and how that evolves, you know, how the vaccination happens, how therapeutics come around, that would very much determine, you know, how that the fear level that is out there in the broad population, how that changes to something that we get comfortable living with as well, right? So that will be one thing that will very much determine how we evolve through this capital markets. And that's, as you said, exogenous, right? And that's not something which we have seen to this scale going back several decades right now.
It's interesting. I mean, you know how quickly markets react, right? Not necessarily capital markets, but down the street from our house, somebody's selling, has a sign in the window, designer masks. There's a market all of a sudden for cool looking masks. If you would have told me that maybe a year ago, I'd have been like, are you kidding me? It's like, yep, that's life today, right? So in the insurance space, you're running a bunch of money. You've got a lot of interesting asset classes. You're a unique insurance company. How are you managing these risks in that framework? I mean, where do you think the biggest risk is for yourself on the insurance side and maybe insurers more broadly?
Yeah, so what really actually, when you think about it, Stuart, is, you know, what happened in the second half of March when the Fed and Treasury came out with the asset purchase program, And then the, you know, the Congress had the stimulus come through. That very much put a nice floor in the markets on that front. Yet the certainty was not absolutely there because, it, you know, as we know, it always takes time and the markets to evolve further to be able to get that, you know, the fear factor come down to a certain level. And as I mentioned, you know, this is what we're dealing with is something which has been driven by an exogenous factor. Not a whole lot of transparency on that front. And when we think about the insurance portfolio and how do we look to manage that at this point, as I mentioned, you know, I think it's really all about managing the downside risk and leaving that upside open on that front. So, which is, as you pointed out as well, it's been, as we tried to schedule the call as well, it took a little bit longer because the markets have been very, very active on that front. You know, there's clearly, I think you think about different factors as well. You know, sectors will respond differently at this time. The, you know, fixed income markets, right? I mean, you think about investment grade credit, spreads had moved out so significantly over a few days. And, you know, they moved back down as well the moment the Fed announcement came in place. So there's a lot of moving parts. I think, you know, there was one time, I think in the, right around mid-March, when the markets almost froze. And that was a scary part in the markets. And that was, and once the Fed came out, you know, we started to see that reversal come through. Now, you know, the equity markets having moved up significantly like that, the question then comes as to how the asset purchase program that came out from the fixed income side of things, you know, leads into the growth in the equity market. There's just tremendous liquidity in the market. And as rates have gone down so low as well, but the reality was, you know, the Fed essentially put a notion in place where we'll do whatever it takes to bring normalcy back into the markets and help out on the economy on that front. So far, it's been working well. The concern that remains is very much how long does this, you know, the COVID-19 risk continue to draw out? Is there a new normal now of operation on that front, right? So from that standpoint, as I think about managing the investment portfolio, you know, I'm okay to give up some of the upside as long as I can manage the downside. Because as we have seen, you know, when the downside does come, you know, it comes very quickly, as we saw in March as well. Not just one day, several days when, you know, -9% move in the equity markets was seen more than one time there as well.
Yeah, it's scary. I mean, it it comes out of nowhere, right? It's frightening. You've been at this a while, and I have too. And so quarterly, your asset manager trots in and they hand you a book and there's performance in it and there's versus a benchmark and that's all good. But we both know, and I think we haven't discussed this, but I'm hoping you agree with me, that there's good reasons to outperform and then there's bad reasons to outperform. If you didn't do something you said you were going to do and you outperform, that's a bad reason. So it's not just the pure number a lot of times that you're looking for. How do you look at performance and maybe differentiate between performance and skill of your internal or external managers?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. You know, and I go back to our kind of ultimate objective. What is my mission in that respect is, you know, my mission is to make sure I do the best possible, you know, management around the portfolio that allows the insurance company to run the business smoothly. That's how I think about, you know, strategically I've achieved what I'm in my job to do on that front, right? So a very, very detailed assessment of the risks that are out there. And so that is a core part when I think about, you know, how are, even as we hire managers, they will actually obviously have strategies they're running. And I have to portfolio construct around looking after different styles and different diversification components that are coming from different strategies, internal as well as external on that front, right? So that is something, you know, I spend a lot of time, how is that portfolio construction coming through, right? So as I call that, you know, it's almost a fairly commonly used word in the investment world is, you try to create an all-weather portfolio. You know, you try to make sure that the portfolio is much more resilient than, you know, a commoditized portfolio that you have out there or most portfolios. that it can handle the downside better. And we saw that on the way down on that front when markets were headed lower. And on the upside, you know, to be able to have that better downside protection, you're going to have to give up some upside. You just don't want to give up a lot on that front, right? Because as we have seen, markets come back with the force as well on that front, right? You know, rightfully or too optimistically at this point, you know, that will, you know, the next several months will tell us that. But that is how you want to approach that as well, right? So when I construct the portfolio, as we do hire external managers as well, you're underwriting a certain style. You're underwriting a strategy based on how they will do on an upside and downside markets. And we just want to make sure that they're doing what we underwrote and what they told us what they're doing as well, right, on the external side. The internal side, you obviously have more day-to-day kind of oversight on that once you're tracking that fairly closely, and you see that as well, right? So, but as you construct the portfolio from a total perspective, you're factoring in the strengths and weaknesses of different components that are making the portfolio as well. And when you do get that diversification effect there, it is net-net doing what you're trying to put out there as a portfolio. So that's how I see the success of our portfolio construction. Within that, you know, you've got to make sure if you underwrote a manager or a strategy for being able to do 400 or 500 basis points in a down market better than what the index, or as I call it, less worse than what the index did, they've done their job, because that's how we have them in that place as well. So you just don't want the style risk. You really want to make sure the strategies and managers you have in place are high conviction strategies and managers where they deliver what they're expected to deliver on that front. Will not be 100%, you know, but in majority of the times that you want to get that for sure.
It's interesting. That's always, you know, as I teach and whatnot, it's a difficult concept to get across to, you know, a retail investor, this idea of sticking to your knitting. You don't want style drift, right? You bought exposure and you want that to stay there. And that makes total sense to me. I want a couple questions wrapped into one. In a percentage terms, how's the portfolio shape up in terms of risk assets? In other words, non-IG fixed. And how do you feel about privates in a portfolio for a company with short tail liabilities?
You know, as I say that, we're patient capital. We're very long-term investors. And in some ways, that is a differentiated edge versus some other investors as well. Although I do say our core differentiation comes from talent. You know, as we construct the portfolio, it's also about the talent construction, you know, on that piece as well, right? So that is, when you think about that, you know, if I have to hedge a liability that's long duration, then I would have a lot of fixed income. The fact that we're property, commercial property insurance company, we can actually very much, as I said, look for the best risk adjusted returns that we can get, right? And when we do that, it's a fairly balanced portfolio on that respect. You know, we will run, it is very much when you think about risk assets or interest rate, you know, assets that we have, we run about almost 50-50 on that front. And when you think about it, you know, while it's say, you know, when we say that as well as that will comprise of equities, will also include some of the private investments, you know, as I said, the longer dated, you know, private equity, private structures as well. And also we do use, you know, once again, high conviction, you know, multi-strategy, absolute return mandates as well. And that very much in a time like what we did see in early, you know, like in Q1 of this year, you know, those multi-strat funds were very, very positive from a contribution perspective to adding to that resilience on that front. So that's something in a quick nutshell, I would say, you know, the longer term private mandates allow us to continue to have the long term expected return come through that adds to our differentiated risk adjusted return from an optimal standpoint.
Lots of asset managers want to get into the insurance asset management business. Thank heaven. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a business at all. So what advice would you give them?
As you think about it as well, it's from an insurance perspective, it is a core component of, you have to understand what each insurance company does or what is the strategic objective. You can't paint, you know, all the insurance company with one broad brush on that front. There certainly has been a lot more interest of asset managers getting into working with insurance companies. And the one advice is always share in an informal manner that I share as well from an asset management perspective is you really have to think about how can you help the insurance client. You know, it's really help us meet our strategic objectives, understand what we're trying to do. We're passionate, and I say that I this is all I do, right? I mean, there are times when you're sitting on a dining table and one of the kids would say, you know, mom, dad's still thinking about work. So it's very, very, you live and breathe this stuff, although, you have a 5-day job, but as we all know, you never stop on that front, right?
So, right, absolutely.
And these are, we run these jobs with not a large team. So any of the experts, the subject matter experts that are out there on the asset management side, want to make sure our program is set up to leverage on that expertise. And, the asset flows that we would not see as an insurance company, investment shop, we'll actually end up getting that knowledge transfer as well as the sharing from very large asset managers. And that is something you over time make sure there's a good solid collaborative effort that we can expand that potential of higher risk adjusted return that we can generate for the portfolio.
Okay, so we're down to two questions and one's going to be very fun. And this one, I think you're going to have a great answer for this one. So we all have heard a lot about fintech. We've all heard a lot about insurtech. All roads lead to tech. How do you think or do you think technology is going to impact investment management, insurance investment management, any of the above?
Yeah, I mean, it's, as we've seen in this last few months as well, technology is a key positive differentiator advantage. I think what we saw in the markets as well over the last few months, it just shows what an accelerated path that could be, right? Some of the cleansing out in markets has been what people were expecting, 2, 3, 5 years down the road, started to become a reality almost at this time as well, right? So that's for sure, even for business continuity, when you think about it, leveraging on technology is going to be a key strength from that standpoint as well, right? On the investment side of things, where, as you think about it, there's just so much, importance technology plays. And I'll mention the simple ones where we rely heavily on Bloomberg and models like FactSet and other risk systems, that you can leverage off that give you the enough information that you're actually able to make solid investment decisions. The other part, which, once again, collaborating with other asset managers as well as that have robust platforms for data science, right? This is a time where you have less transparency on what's out there from an economic/market perspective. Data science can actually give you some of these, these indicators or leading indicators for that matter in a much more plausible manner as well. So that is another piece where, as we talk about diversification within the portfolio, we may not have a large amount, be it from a factor strategy or one that uses, different forms of AI, that is here to stay, right? And it comes out to be, we run a fundamental strategy and we look to kind of wrap that with other strategy approaches where we can take advantage of technology advancement that has happened at the investment manager shops, things that we can then apply from a holistic perspective as well. And not an expert on the insurtech side, given the focus on investments, but very much those are areas that are coming up in a very strong manner as well.
That's really cool. I just am fascinated with it. And I think things that were impossible, just a few years ago, or a phone app. It's just incredible that the pace of change. I can keep up with it. Some of it I can't, but it's remarkable. I want to paint a picture for you. I was a professor at Lake Forest College for 6 years, and we frequently had executives in to be on a panel. And ultimately what would happen as the executive would say, are there any questions? And no one would raise their hand. It's just like a board meeting. Any questions? And nobody, right? So, but afterward, there's a line. And there would be a line of people waiting to speak to you. And a young man walks up, or a young woman, but I'm going down the path with you. The young man is a senior in college. He's 21 years old, and he's from New Delhi. And he says to you, Sanjay, what, or he would say, Mr. Chawla, he'd say, Mr. Chawla, what advice would you give me? What would you say to him?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I, you know, I have to say, I, you know, having kids around that age, I do that a lot. And I think you get the title of the lecture dad in your household. But I, you know, it's just such a fascinating thing, because when you look back, you know, when I look back at my life, and it's all the things you could do. I think the one thing that is very clear, you know, if you pick things up early, you have such a differentiated advantage, right? So the, you know, as I tell our kids as well, you know, pick up your passion. You know, you can modify that passion as you go along, but make sure you are kind of thinking of what you want to do, because the best thing you can do is become experts in things early on. And whatever area field you decide you want to pursue, look to become an expert. As I call it, you know, in the seat I sit, you know, I have laser focus on results and on the portfolio and the investment management, right? So, that is what I coach to. And I have to say, it's really amazing, gratifying to see the kids already have that focus area significantly, right? So that is, find your passion, pursue that diligently. Don't, you know, and I want to tell you this, I would drop off our daughter in high school, and I would say, enjoy learning. And I would get that look like, Dad, what are you talking about, right? So, you know, it's really that part, right? You always want to learn. You always want to excel. Because the sooner you kind of travel that road, the avenues and the horizon just expand significantly, right? So I think I feel very grateful for all the support that I got, you know, because it was also because I was very focused on what I wanted to do, and the work ethic was strong. And as I look back to some roles where you're even guiding some of the younger analysts, is always what I would see is there is a certain amount of hunger and progression that I want to do something else. And one piece of advice I would always give them is just make sure whatever job you're in, you do that in the best possible manner. And that is the best way you will get the job you really want to do in the long run, right? And every job, everything you do is a stepping stone in the learning process. And the sooner you pick that up, you know, the better you will have your path laid out for you down the road as well.
That's fantastic advice. I love that. And I can't thank you enough. I can't thank you enough for being on today. If you don't know Sanjay Chawla, I'm here to tell you, it's a joy. We haven't known each other very long, but you'll never meet a nicer or smarter guy. And I really appreciate you taking the time and fitting us in this time around. So Sanjay, thanks so much. Thanks for being here. Thanks for listening. My name is Stuart Foley, and this is the Insurance AUM Journal podcast.